Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Here's your hosts, Jazz and David.
G'day listeners, welcome back to another episode of Spark Your Fire. I'm your host, David Shee, and as always, we've got Jazz Stana on the Melbourne side of things. How are you doing, Jazz?
I'm really good, David. The weather is pretty crappy outside and we are stuck at home like everyone else, work from home. Yeah.
That's a new norm, mate. That's a new norm, to be honest. Yeah. And I think, but the good news is I think at least according to the figures this morning, the numbers have started to come down, or the new cases started to come down. So certainly locking people in is starting to make a difference.
We're trying to flatten the curve, which is looking a little bit positive. Mm. But I wonder what's happening with the economic environment. I mean, health is one thing and the financial markets is one thing. So we've got another special guest on the show today to discuss the financial market or the economy side of things. David, I'll let you introduce.
Well, we've actually got Roger Montgomery back on the show. He joined us about 6 months ago and talking about value investing, which I think had a really popular feedback as well. So given Roger's expertise in the current market, I think it makes perfect sense to bring him back on the show again. G'day, Roger. Welcome back.
Oh, good to be with you. Thanks, David. Thanks, Jazz.
Roger, it's great to have you on the show.
Always.
Last few weeks, we saw the stock market obviously tank by roughly 30%, and since then it's recovered a little bit, obviously. What's going on in the macro environment? If you want to maybe start with the macro side of things a little bit, of where we headed this year, 2020 has been a bit crazy start, the first quarter of it.
Yeah, look, it's impossible to talk about the economy without referencing coronavirus and COVID-19. And so in response to the outbreak of the virus, what has happened is governments are in various forms trying to slow the spread of the virus. So there's a number of ways of doing that. One is the UK tried and decided to pull back from it, and that was to encourage herd immunity. But of course, that would have an enormous detrimental impact on health and also the health system. So lots of people would die and the health system would be overloaded. So the world has backed away from the idea of herd immunity, and instead lockdowns have been implemented. Now, lockdowns are great because it helps to slow the spread of the virus, but unfortunately it doesn't kill the virus. And it doesn't mean that the virus is gone. So if we are in lockdown for a couple of weeks and we see the curve of new cases flatten, it doesn't mean that we can all go back to work, because all that will happen is the curve will steepen again. And so really what is going to happen is that we're going to be in this suspended state of animation for quite some time, and that's going to have a very serious impact on the economy. It basically means the economy is on life support or in hibernation, and I don't think the bounce, you referenced the fall in the market, which was very steep and very fast, and then the subsequent bounce. I think the bounce doesn't factor in or isn't considering the possibility or the reality that this is going to last a lot longer, and it's going to take a while. In fact, we will probably be in this situation until we have a vaccine or a treatment, and so therefore the economy, Western economies around the world will be in recession, and I don't think that matters, because the world knows that. It's how we come out of it that will determine where the best investments are likely to be.
Clearly, we are headed into recession, or we are already in recession, you can call it, although it's only first quarter of it. But how long do you think this will last, this environment that we are sitting in right now?
It will last until there is a vaccine. So let's deal with the question of a vaccine. I've heard people say, a vaccine will be developed in 12 months. If that's for that to happen, that would be a world record for the development of a vaccine. No vaccine has been developed, tested, trialed, and released in 12 months ever before. So that would be a record if it happens in 12 months' time. So, you know, to answer your question, we're talking at least 12 months, that might come as a shock to people, and people might say, well, that's ridiculous, that's crazy, that's unrealistic. But you got to remember, when Scott Morrison first suggested that we don't shake hands, people thought that was ridiculous, and now nobody's shaking hands. So, you know, what was ridiculous early is not so ridiculous as we head towards it. And in terms of economic growth, what we need to remember is that Australia was already growing very, very slowly even before COVID-19. We had a retail recession before Christmas. We had, foot traffic into stores was declining substantially. We had a 30 to 40% drop in residential construction or development applications, building applications. So we knew that meant that retail was going to have it be going through a tough time anyway. And COVID-19 has actually helped retailers because you know, retailers have sold out of table tennis tables, they've sold out of freezers, they've sold out of fridges, because people have hoarded food and realised, well, I need to entertain the kids at home. So there's some benefit, but what that does, of course, is it just brings demand forward. So people who are going to buy toilet paper in 3 months' time, they've bought all their toilet paper now for the next 6 months. So it front loads the sales that were going to occur, and it just means that's all going to stop now. So we will be in a recession. It will last longer than the market is currently factoring in. It's socially it's going to be a lot harder. At the moment, everyone's pretty, not enthused, but, you know, they're kind of comfortable and accepting with having conversations online, going on Skype and FaceTime and Zoom and all of those. I think Zoom's dangerous, by the way. But everyone's kind of excited about it. You know, it's all a bit novel. You wait till 6 months passes and people are still at home. They still can't go out. It's going to be a lot harder for society to accept. And that's still to come. And the market bounce hasn't factored that in.
So that was my next question, actually. So we haven't really seen the bottom yet. It's just a temporary recovery that we are seeing. That means there's chances of further losses on the stock market.
I think so. Market bottoms usually coincide with three things happening. Number one, maximum panic. We've seen a lot of panic. We bought some shares. You might remember recently the market fell 13.5% in a day in the United States. I think it was the biggest one-day fall since 1987. Then subsequently we've had the biggest one-day gain since 1933. So, that fall, that low that was put in, that reflected maximum panic. But that's only one ingredient. The other ingredient that you need is capitulation. It's where people give up. Now, that hasn't happened yet. In fact, I spoke recently to the head of a private bank in Australia, or the private banking arm of one of the big four banks, and they told me that they have recently received a record number of applications for loans, mortgage extensions and margin loans to buy shares. And so we haven't had that capitulation. We haven't had that point where people give up on investing entirely and they just say, just get me out. I don't want to be in shares. This is awful. It's going to last a long time. We're never going to come out of it. You know, that kind of giving up, that I call it capitulation, we haven't seen that yet. So that's the second ingredient that you need. And the third ingredient that you need is a very large wave of capital raisings. Now, we've had some. So we've had the likes of Ooh Media, Webjet, Flight Centre. There's been a few others. I'm just trying to think of some names now, but there's been quite a few. But that's just the first phase. And there is a whole bunch of companies at the moment that arguably are trading insolvent. And they're getting away with it because the legislation around insolvency is changing quite quickly. But those companies, when the quality companies that people think today are going to be fine and those companies won't need to raise money, when they come to market and raise money, not the companies that are on the precipice like Kathmandu and so on, but the companies that everyone thought, oh, I thought this was a really high quality business, I didn't think they'd ever have to come to market to raise money. When you get those companies raising money, that's when you're near the bottom. And we haven't had that yet. We're only a week in or 2 weeks into this, really. We're still some way off. We're some way off the bottom yet. We haven't seen it. That's my firm's view and our investment team's view.
So how much of a further drop do you expect from the bottom? So it did drop by 30%. How much further drop do you see on top of that?
I was expecting sort of 40 to 50%. So another 10% from the bottom, you know, at 10%. So when we're at 30% down or 32% down, we were expecting a bounce and then potentially another test of the lows and eventually another 10% lower.
Right. Okay. What does that mean for the real estate market, Mike? Obviously, the prices we saw this year, start of this year, late last year, they were bouncing back.
They bounced a lot.
Yeah, we almost got back to the 2017-16 high. What happens now? And we haven't even seen the full unemployment yet. That's another thing to be discussed. But where do you see the property market headed?
So there's a lot of there's a fundamental view that you can apply, which just basically looks at the market the way you'd look at it at any other time. But now you're seeing changes being made to legislation about eviction, about rental relief, about mortgage relief, and that changes the analysis or the classic demand and supply analysis that you would apply to the property market. So the rule book is you throw that out the window now. That doesn't apply anymore. So, okay, let's try and break it down. So people who've lost their jobs at the moment, the majority of people who've lost their jobs are people who work part-time and casual workers. That's not quite true because I've got friends, for example, who are pilots for Qantas and they've been stood down as well. Some of them are being let go with no pay. Others are being, you know, they're able to take some holidays, holidays without pay and holidays with pay. So it's all a bit jumbled up. But the majority of people who are out of work at the moment are casual and part-timers. Most of them don't have a mortgage. Most of them live at home or rent. And so that doesn't really affect the property market unless you're a landlord and one of those people are your tenant and they can't pay the rent anymore and you've got a mortgage on that property and you can't pay the mortgage because you're not getting the income from the rent. And so then a couple of things happen. So we're sort of flowing this through. Then the next thing that happens is if you're renting another property and you're renting out that particular property, well, maybe you stop renting and you move into the property you'd previously tenanted. And so that there's a dynamic there. Then that flows on to the next person who was renting and they don't have a tenant anymore that can pay rent. So then it goes to the bank. Does the bank give you rental mortgage relief? And what does that look like? Do they still accrue the interest and you pay it later, or do they forgive? And the bank at the moment, there's a working committee between the government and the states that are now trying to answer those questions about what rules will be imposed on landlords and what rules will be imposed on banks. And the outcome of that will help inform the view about property. But let's say it's safe to say property is not going up. Okay, we rule that out. Property's not going up. There's no auctions occurring at the moment, or very few. People are scared to go and inspect properties even by appointment, so that's not happening as much. And so turnover is going to drop. And in fact, turnover has already fallen. You saw auction clearance rates the other day fall to 30% or thereabouts from 80% previously. That's not going to change. It's probably going to go lower. So property prices aren't going to go up. Now, the question remains, how far do they go down? The answer to that is that depends on the extent of forced selling and who's forced to sell their property. And the quantum of people forced to sell the property depends on the government's response to what's going on and the legislation they put in with respect to evictions and rental relief and mortgage relief and so on. So we can't answer the question about how far property falls because we haven't got all the inputs yet.
Just assume for a second, it won't be surprising in the current economic environment that the unemployment hits 10 to 15%. That's it, conservative. 10% is there on the cards, right?
Yep.
With 10% unemployment rate, and at the same time, assume that the banks are happy to suspend mortgages for investors who have got investment properties, still there is an impact to the property market.
Well, how? You tell me the transmission mechanism. What's the transmission mechanism to get property prices down? You have to have people selling. And, you know, it only needs a small number of people selling, but you have to have people selling.
So the sales are still happening. Real estate agents are still, they're doing auctions virtually now, right?
Yes.
Open inspections virtually. So the transactions are still happening, but they're limited.
That's my point. Property prices will fall to the extent there are forced sales. And all I'm saying is we don't know the extent of the forced selling. Okay, and we don't know to what extent the pressure of forced selling overwhelms the ability of people to buy. So, you know, you and I sitting in our homes today with no intention to sell a property, we don't influence property prices. The majority of homeowners don't influence property prices. What will influence property prices is what happens this weekend and next, the weekend after. So it's the marginal buyer and seller that determines the property prices for everyone else. And so the extent to which we get forced selling will determine how much lower property prices go, because you've got to remember that you've got a seller who's forced to sell, but you may also have, as you rightly pointed out, there's still virtual auctions going on. And if that's the case, you may still have enough buyers willing to pay a price that stops the property market from falling too far. So, you know, that's why I say to you, it's the extent of forced selling that will determine property prices, and that forced selling will ultimately be determined by government responses to what's happening in the economy.
At what point does it become risky for banks to hold these mortgages, basically? How much of a drop will put our banking system into risk, because that's the main source of income for big
companies? Well, as the result of David Murray's financial system inquiry many, many years ago now, we have made our banks unquestionably strong. So that meant that they had to raise capital, large amounts of capital, to bolster the equity on their balance sheets to survive a substantial drop in property prices. So if their mortgage book, if the assets backing the mortgage book fell significantly, let's say I think it was 30% or 40%, the banks would still survive without any trouble at all. And I wouldn't want to live anywhere other than Australia when it comes to banking systems, because I think we have the most robust banking system in the world. We don't have to worry about our banks. The equity might be blown up. So investors in banks, people who own the equity, their equity might be torched, but the banks will survive. If banks are forced to raise more equity down the track at deeply discounted prices, they will do that, and the government will support that, and that just means that the equity holders in the banks, they lose a lot of money.
So the other thing, Roger, is the stimulus package that the government has been announcing. I think we are 100 billion plus now, whatever the figure is. I don't have the figure on me right now. But obviously there's QE being conducted. We don't have much rates left to go any lower. What happens with all these borrowing that government will have to undertake to fund the economy right now?
Well, the generations after us will be paying for that. It takes a long time. So the rule around debt is very simple. You imagine you personally have a huge debt over your head, and it takes a long time to pay that down. So you modify your spending behavior so to prioritize paying down that debt. So you don't go on holidays as much, you don't spend as much on televisions and electronic equipment and whatever, and you focus on paying down that debt. It doesn't matter whether we're talking about an individual, a company, or a country, the same rules apply when it comes to paying down debt. And so the more debt that we accumulate, the longer it takes to pay off. At low interest rates, we don't mind having a lot of debt. We can inflate our way out of it, but I don't know how we do that when we've already got a monumental amount of debt. I don't know how we give people more capacity to spend if they've already got a lot of debt. So it just means that once we come out of coronavirus, the recovery may not be sharp. It may not be a very fast growth environment that we emerge into. We may discover that the economy really just plods along at a very low rate for quite a long period of time until that debt burden is brought down.
So that's a long slog, basically.
Correct.
What do you see? I mean, interest rates are currently sitting at 0.25%.
Yep.
Do you see them going negative from here?
Well, the Reserve Bank of Australia, I had lunch with the Reserve Bank last year and with Guy DeBell, who's the assistant governor. He said to me that it's very unlikely that the RBA will put rates down to negative or will set rates at negative. So I think they're out of bullets now at 0.25, quite frankly. And I think that's why you saw so much talk last year, which really is unprecedented. But you saw a lot of talk out of the Reserve Bank encouraging the government to step in where the RBA can't. You know, it's really it's on the rates front, it's run out of bullets. But what it has done is a lot of other things. You know, it's doing a lot of work in the bond market. It's injecting a lot of capital into credit markets to keep that liquid and keep it running. And consequently, we have a lot less to worry about than we would have if the RBA hadn't stepped in.
We saw the Aussie dollar tumbling. The currency just went down sharply. Now, I'm trying to pull up the stats for that, how much it went down by against the
US. I think the bottom was around 0.55 to US dollars. I think at one point it actually hit to that low, but now it's bouncing back to about 0.6 again.
So if
it got up to 0.62 just a few days ago. I would have thought the next wave of selling in equity markets globally will be amid the realization that the economy is going to be in a deeper funk for a longer period of time, and that will be a negative on the Aussie dollar, and you'll probably see the Aussie dollar fall further, probably retouch 55 again.
So, Roger, without the impact of the coronavirus, do you still see this financial depression coming? Is it just a matter of time when coronavirus kind of become the catalyst that speed up the whole process?
First, I don't see a financial depression. I don't see a depression. We're in a low growth environment and a low interest rate environment now for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. Having said that, though, the market, the equity market will bottom before the bottom in the economy. The stock markets cast their shadow before them. They're always looking forward. And so you could see the lows put in place long before you see the market starting to recover. In fact, it could get worse for the economy, and the stock market has already bottomed and has moved off its lows. You'll see more volatility going forward than we've seen in the past. The last 10 years, the market's pretty much just gone up every year, and it's been nice and smooth in a northeasterly direction. That's over now. You'll see a much more whipsawing market where, you know, you see the market drop significantly and then bounce significantly and then drop again. And that's an ideal environment for value investing. You know, that's we do well in that kind of environment.
So volatile, it's going to be very, very volatile.
More volatile than you've seen in the past, yeah.
And that's because of the amount of money and the amount of liquidity that's in the market, because they're pumping trillions of money in there. Right, okay. And do you see that in the next, as you mentioned, I think we're entering into a low growth, low inflation type of phase for the next, I don't know, decades.
I think inflation, but inflation is a risk out the other side of this. Inflation is a risk because we'll be coming off a lower base. So when you come off lower numbers, it's easy to show faster growth. And so inflation is a risk. I just want to point out that, you know, the Reserve Bank has done a lot. You know, it's cut interest rates. You know, that was great. And that encourages the banks to drop their borrowing rates for businesses and households. It's purchasing Australian government bonds. You know, that helped to bring down the 3-year bond rate to 0.25%. And that's important because what that does is it reduces the cost of fixed rate loans for businesses and households. So, you know, they've done that. They're offering, you know, the RBA has offered banks long-term funding facilities, again, reducing the cost of funding for banks. You know, so it's the Reserve Bank is doing a lot. It's also offering very cheap secured term funding for 6 months or more. I think that's at 30 basis points. So, you know, there's a lot that the RBA is doing to help us prevent prevent a depression and a deep recession. And it's also doing it to make sure that credit markets, bond markets don't seize up. You know, so we don't get that financial depression that you referred to. So it's really important to understand that it is a challenging time. It is very serious. It is very bad. But we've got regulators, governments, and central banks doing all that they can to avoid a panic.
Yeah, that's understandable, and I think that's with all the recent free stimulus that the government has pumped out, it totally makes sense that we're avoiding that. Now, in terms of, so do you see that moving forward due to this, due to the amount of funding in the market, do you see that the assets, all the asset prices going to go up after things have stabilised down?
I don't know. I think I'm a value investor. We look at individual companies. We will see really high quality businesses raise money at really ridiculous prices. So I'll give you an example. This is not a high quality example, but a company called IDP Education, which we've owned in the past and made a lot of money out of. They provide, you know, the IELTS system, which is, so if you want to come and work in Australia or study in Australia or live in Australia, you have to do an English language test. Yeah. So they run those tests globally with a couple of universities. And so they were trading at $3 recently, and they did a capital raising at $1.70. So they raised money, and institutional investors like us were able to participate and buy shares at $1.70, even though the shares are trading at $3. So, you know, you'll see a lot of investment opportunities to make money like that. Now, as an individual investor, you really can't participate in those. You need to be invested in a fund that can. So there'll be opportunities like that where you can make money even if the economy is flatlining. So that's just one example where, you know, you can still make a profit without the stock market rising substantially. You can still make money in assets without the assets rising substantially by finding these kind of deals. And in the property market, which we talked about earlier, you know, you may find the property market as a whole doesn't go up a lot, but you were able to buy a property from a distressed seller and, you know, you can get a really good yield out of that property. So you might get a yield of 6%. you know, which is a great return in an environment where the economy is flatlining and the property market is flatlining.
Mm-hmm. No, it's all, it's all making sense. And also just want to touch on a little bit about the US stock market. I guess it's, do you hold the same view as like just like ASX that's going to be a bit more bloodbath, still a bit more to go down?
Yes, yeah, I do. So, so the US is still in a fairy tale in terms of its view about what's going to happen there. Mm. They have started testing very, very late. To give you some idea, they in January, we knew coronavirus was an issue. I was coming back from an overseas trip. I wore a mask flying back. So, you know, even in January, we knew coronavirus was an issue. And yet the US, with a population of 330 million people, they were conducting 40 tests per day on average for coronavirus. And then in February, when it got really, you know, it started, the numbers started to spread, you know, and we saw Italy start to register cases, and we could see that it was going to spread to the Western liberal democracies outside of China and South Korea and Hong Kong. And we knew that it was going to be serious, and yet the US in February, on average, conducted 92 tests per day. So they were way behind the curve. They weren't testing enough people. And if you don't test, you don't find. So guess what? It all looks good over in America. No one's got coronavirus because, not because they don't have it, because no one's testing for it. But now they're ramping up testing. And what we're seeing coming out of New York, for example, is 50% detection rates. So now that they are testing, they're finding half the population that is being tested has coronavirus. So they're about to get the shock of their lives because they've got some states locking down and other states not locking down. You may as well not lock down. So they were late to testing. That gave time for the virus to spread. They haven't locked down the entire country. That's giving the virus time to spread. And now they're testing and they're finding 50% of the population has coronavirus. So they are going to their shock is still ahead of them.
I don't know whether you noticed, David, or not, but the unemployment number came out this morning and it's sitting at 10 million now. So it's up from 0.2 million, I think it was, to 10 million, if that number is accurate. Yeah. So, Roger, for the investors who are cashed up and looking for the opportunity, your advice to them would be right now?
Wait.
Right.
Be patient. Because the maximum panic, there was a day where the market fell, the US market fell 13.5%, and I've already referred to that. That was one opportunity to buy. We bought some stock then because that was maximum panic. But as I said earlier, there's three ingredients. So we think that there's probably further weakness to come. If you missed that maximum panic opportunity, then the market has since bounced. So my suggestion would be to wait a bit longer.
That's and some of the stocks on the Australian stock market that you'll be watching.
It's difficult. I'm reluctant to give you some names. I will give you some names, but I'm reluctant to do so because if listeners go out and buy those stocks, you and I might not talk again for 6 months, and the opportunity to sell those stocks might have passed as well. And then what do you do? So, you know, if I tell you what stocks that we're looking at and you go out and buy them, just be mindful that you're taking on a very, very big risk. If you're interested in what we're buying, then investigate our funds. You know, really, if you're interested in our method of investing, then invest in the fund. That way you don't have to worry about what to buy and what to sell anymore. Having said that, though, some of the things that we'll be looking at are companies like CSL and Cochlear and the CBA, for example. And then at the more, you know, that's the higher quality end. Then we'll be looking at companies that are directly impacted by coronavirus and could go broke, but if they raise enough money at the bottom, they'll come out of it and there'll be a big recovery in them. And businesses like Webjet and Flight Centre and Sydney Airports and Transurban, you know, those businesses, they'll cut dividends. Sydney Airports and Transurban separate to Flight Centre. You know, Flight Centre could go broke But it will raise a lot of money, and it will raise it at a deeply discounted price. And when coronavirus, the pandemic is over, and the World Health Organization declares the pandemic over, people will go back to traveling again. And so what businesses will benefit from that? Well, Flight Centre could benefit from that. But there's a high risk there. They need to raise a lot of money. And so if you buy now, you'll be diluted quite dramatically, and you could lose money. So you want to wait for that one. Sydney Airports, on the other hand, and Transurban, they'll benefit in a recovery as well. Atlas Arteria, which owns owns a stake in 2,400 kilometres of toll roads in France, that'll do well. People will go back to travelling again, and transport will go back. Logistics will come back. All of those things will happen. And in 3 years' time, we won't be talking about coronavirus. But it's really important that you navigate those stocks really well, and understand their balance sheets, and understand the risk that some of them could go broke. So you want to, where that's the case, you want to wait until they've raised money. You don't want to buy before that risk has passed. And then you've got the really speculative companies that don't make money at the moment. You know, they've fallen 80, 90%. Those companies will bounce as well, provided they've got capacity to fund their staff during this pandemic. Companies like PointsBet, for example, or NextDC, they're the sorts of businesses that I think will do very well out the other side of this, provided they survive it. So there's some ideas. I don't want people rushing out to buy them, though, because I'm not going to be able to ring you to tell you when to sell. There's risks involved with buying them, so seek personal professional advice.
I appreciate that, Roger. It was great to have you on the show once again. And
great to be with you, David. Jazz, really enjoyed it.
Yeah. David, do you got any more questions before we wrap this up?
No. I think that's all we want to cover today. Thank you, Roger. Right. That's really a lot of insights today.
Pleasure, gents.
Awesome. Thanks, Roger, once again for being on the show. And to our listeners, hope you guys are enjoying the content. If you are, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or whatever app you're using. Cheers, Jazz and David. Bye.